Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Well, that's good. But now you are on the edge with me and my brains. Brains, welcome home. You are at the spot, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. And look who I found, Dennis Ford.
Well, hi.
I've been wanting to interview him for, 2 years now?
Well, I think that's about the time we first talked, yes.
And I found him, you know, like I find most of my precious jewels on the internet, and I was fascinated by him. You know, he is an actor, he's a director, he's a award-winning speaker and author, he is the president of QLP, we're going to ask him what that is, and also brains, he swings from a trapeze. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that, and all the amazing work that he's doing. Welcome to On the Edge, Dennis, finally.
It is a delight to be here with you. You are a total rock star, and I am honored to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Maybe I get in the Hall of Fame.
You ought to be. The Podcast Hall of Fame. I'm sticking to it.
Thank you. I've been killing it, though. I'm not going to be humble about it at all because it's been work, but I love every minute of it because I get to talk to great people like you. So tell me and my brains, how do you show up in the world, sir?
Well, that's a big, broad question. As you said, I've got a lot of areas I could go into. What do you want to attack first?
Let's just start with your humble beginnings and, you know, maybe your acting career.
Well, I actually didn't start acting till I was 40. My first 15 years, I was in a very corporate environment. And I kind of wanted to do it, but as soon as I even dipped my toe in the water, the powers that be said, no, we don't do that. And so I had a 15-year career in commercial real estate, and I was a senior vice president in a great big company. And when I left that in 1992, I then got my first agent and started acting then. So I was, I guess, about 38 when I started. So I was a late bloomer.
So what was the acting bug? It must have always been in you. What really sparked you to move on that?
Actually, I was dating an actress at the time.
And
I'd never even done a high school play, literally. I'd never been on stage except in the corporate world. And so she got me with her agent and I auditioned, and the agent was really kind and said, wow, I think we have something here. And pretty soon I was doing commercials, films, television.
Wow.
I co-starred in a BBC miniseries, which was really special. About 4 or 5 years ago, I got to beat up Michael Pena when he was playing Cesar Chavez. And so I certainly did not want to be the day player that ruptured the star's spleen. So I had to be very careful. But that was really fun. And it's more an avocation than a vocation. Let's face it, there's a gazillion actors in the world and it's very difficult to make a living. I'd started Quantum Leap Productions, and it's kind of a niche or boutique communications company. And we can talk a little bit about that if you'd like. So I have just been acting, you know, here as an Arizona actor for, 30 years, probably, almost.
Wow.
And I do enough work that it's super fun. I mainly just enjoy it. I mean, they pay well, but I do it for free. It's that much fun.
No, we don't work for free.
We don't work for free.
No. But you know what? If it feeds your heart and it feeds your soul, that's good. That's right.
Well, I love doing it. And I'm very connected to theater. Quantum Leap is actually very integrated into theater. And we can talk about that too, if it's.
Well, I do want to talk about that because you are a big, strong proponent and advocate of my daughter's work. And she is just glowing.
Oh, she's stunning. Well, and what she's able to do, she just takes my breath away.
Yeah, she's just really
absolutely
amazing.
Takes my breath away.
So tell me a little bit about Quantum Leap Productions.
I had 15 years in the corporate world, and it was a very staid, conservative world. And I definitely colored outside the lines in my role as a senior vice president. And I was a manager of the Phoenix office of a company called CB Commercial, very large commercial real estate brokerage. And I'd had all the fun that I could stand, and I just wanted to get out and do something more creative. So I started a Quantum Leap Productions, a creative messaging company for the corporate world, because I got the corporate world. I'd spent 15 years there. Mm-hmm. But the real catalyst, April, was that I would go to these big meetings that CB would spend a fortune on. I mean, millions of dollars, 1,000 people from all over the country. The lights would go down, and the set's beautiful, and the room is beautiful. And then someone stands up on stage and PowerPoint slides come up. You can see by the demographics of the East Coast, things have changed significantly over the last 24 months. Now, if you go up to number 60, subsection 9, you'll see, well, you can't really read it. But if you could read it, it would say, and I just thought, this is a waste. Mm. They spent all this money, got all these people into a room. And it's not that the message was bad, but the delivery was horrific. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I'm going to start a company that won't change the message, but will radically change the delivery. Mm-hmm. So in that scenario, senior VP of sales is up there. It's the holy grail of information. This is the stuff that leadership has poured over, that the 500 people or 1,000 people in the meeting, they've got to get this. They got to embrace it. They've got to believe in it. They've got to go do it. Happens every day, except during COVID, happens every day in live meetings, big corporate meetings all across America. So I'll dig into that stuff. So I won't change the information. I might cull it down. I might say to leadership, you know, you've got 60 things here. Let's make it 6 instead. And those are the things that we're really going to try and behaviorally change or
improve. Right. Because and you have to create, I've worked in television as well, and you've got to create an ambiance. You know, you've got to have a buy-in.
Absolutely. Well, and that's a perfect segue.
Yeah. And if you don't have the buy-in, and people are not going to enact on it, and, you know, like you said, it's a waste.
So our solution might be that instead of the senior VP of sales or marketing up there with PowerPoint slides, all of this information is delivered in an all-original musical comedy. Cast of 8, live band, 6 production numbers, fully choreographed, 60 pages.
Oh, come on.
Based on the fact that we remember plays, films, and stories for years, for decades. We don't remember a speech for 5 minutes because we tune out.
Life is story.
And this is the secret sauce, and you hit on it. So management's message, 30,000 foot view. The 500 people in the audience, boots on the ground. These are the people who have to implement it. And their BS meters go off really fast.
Yeah.
When leadership says, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and it's going to be great. And you have 5 people going and not buying it.
It turns into 1-800 Snorefest.
Yes. So what we do is after we interview leadership, and I really understand their message, we then interview the audience. And I'll do 20 interviews with people who are in that audience. And this is where the real information comes from. The foibles, the screw-ups, the victories, the losses, the triumphs, the things that drive people crazy. So what happens is however I craft the story, and I've written and produced 120 original musical comedies over the years, maybe 130. So what happens, the very first thing is that whatever they consider the hot button, that's what they see on stage, and we slay the sacred cow. And mm-hmm. Now that 500 people is going, well, yeah, that's what I think. Now we've got them, April. Mm. Now whatever's in their minds, they see that on stage. And now in the so the story itself, it's not about management's message. It's about the people in the room, their lives, their challenges, what they do, how they do it, and their triumphs. Then management's message becomes a solution in the context of a story. If there's a formula, that's the formula. Everyone is different because we custom create.
But that's great implementation because it's fun. It's interactive. You get real-time responses.
Oh, we have never, in 30 years of doing these, we have never not had a standing ovation. Mm. And sometimes we've done this for audiences that came loaded for bear.
Wow.
These are audiences who walked in going, oh, this is bad. What's going to happen? And I'm not saying we change the world, but we can certainly change attitudes in that minute. And it's by being very empathetic. And you hit it a while ago when you said you have to honor the audience. You have to think, show them that you have empathy and understand them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so often corporate leadership doesn't. And yeah. And that even led to the book. That very precept led to the creation of the book a few years ago. But so we're a full service video messaging company, and we also do live productions, and that's what Quantum Leap does.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Great segue. Let's talk about the book, because you are still, you know, you re-release it and you're just flying to the top of the charts.
I am absolutely dazzled that my 4-year-old book hit number one bestseller 4 weeks ago.
Again, wow.
On Amazon.
Where is it? Let me see.
Oh, this is the book.
Monetize Your Culture.
Culture.
Really? Wait a minute. I couldn't see the bottom.
I'll put it right there.
It's got a little glare to it. It says, create a passionate, committed workforce that actually increases your bottom line and costs you nothing. All right. So where'd you get the pixie dust? Tell us about that.
Oh, okay. The pixie dust. Well, for me to do what Quantum Leap does, I've sat in hundreds of high-level leadership meetings. In other words, that's where I get that holy grail of information. And over the years, I saw this chronic disconnect that leadership had with their own people. Perfect example, and I won't use the name. A major bank, top 20 Fortune 500, maybe top 10. And I'm with their senior people, and they're talking about their messaging and what they're going to do and what's really important. And then at some point, they actually started denigrating their own employees. All our salespeople are a bunch of damn prima donnas, and they don't know how good they've got it. In our back shop, they have no sense of immediacy. They don't get it. And damn it, nobody gives good customer service. So they're kind of kvetching and complaining about their own culture without realizing they are the culture.
That's
no
right.
Culture. This is a cornerstone of my whole philosophy in speaking and the book and culture consulting is that no culture in the history of ever started with a downline employee, worked its way up to a CEO who said, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. That's the company we'll be, said no CEO ever. It always starts a company culture at the top. CEO and the C-suite team, and it matriculates downward through the organization as a set of beliefs and behaviors, attitudes, and expectations. So years
and spreadsheets, because it's the bottom line is the dollars and cents.
Well, it is, but what I've actually done, and the reason I called it Monetize Your Culture, is I have affixed a dollar value to a culture of respect, appreciation, trust, and empathy. I've literally taken it from the realm of feel good to the realm of do this because you're going to be much more productive and make a lot more money. Now, I happened to mention this to a dear friend of mine who actually I met flying trapeze. We would go to the same coach in Los Angeles. And I knew her a couple of years. I knew she was a high-level business coach. Had a company in San Diego. So I had an idea about this culture stuff. Well, do you know Allison Maslin? Did we ever talk about this?
No, but because
are you in San Diego?
Absolutely.
Okay, you need to know Allison Maslin. She is a business juggernaut. The name of her group is Pinnacle. She's got, I don't know how many companies who have joined her in this ongoing mentorship of her and her team. So anyway, I sent her some ideas I had about culture thing. Maybe we can work together. I swear, literally, this happened April. She gets back to me and says, no, we're not going to work together. And I laughed. She said, what you're going to do is you're going to write a book. This is really important. I thought it was the nicest brush off a friend could ever give another. You go write that book, little mister. You go away and you go write your book. And so she actually got back to me a few weeks later and said, are you writing a book? And I said, no, this is about 4 years ago. And I said, no. And she said, okay, here's the deal. There's a seminar, starts next week. It's here in San Diego. It demystifies writing a book. You're going. And she arranged for me to go to the seminar. And she was right. It demystified it. And 90 days later, I had the book. So,
wow.
So when you actually have a deadline and have to do something, it's amazing what you can get done.
Absolutely.
And so that was the genesis of writing the book, but it's all based. I didn't set out to be a culture guy. But what I realized is, I'll put it this way, and I've said it before, even in keynotes, everything that I advocate in the book, an eighth grader knows. If you say to a 13-year-old, let me ask you, do you think somebody who's, I don't know, trusted and respected, do you think they'd do a better job and work harder? 13-year-old, well, duh. I've sat in the room with Wharton MBAs and Stanford MBAs and Harvard MBAs, and they and heard them denigrate their own employees because they.
Well, you know, to me, like my Jamaican friend says, you can have as many degrees as a thermometer and still not know what temperature it is. They go to school, you know, to learn how to learn. They never go to school to interact. And a long time ago, I worked for a major corporation. Oh, yes, Brains, I have had corporate jobs, good ones. And there was a culture of entitlement. You know, it used to be where our moms and dads worked for a company for 20 years. They knew they were going to get that pension. They knew they were going to get their benefits. They knew that they were going to, as long as they stayed, that they were going to gradually go up the food chain. That all changed. And it's not the family environment anymore. The camaraderie. It turned into a dogfight, dog eat dog. I was talking about the corporate culture of some of the women, because women are really at a point now where they really want to take over. And I get that. But if they don't work on the isms, sexism, racism, classism, you're just changing the gender. You're not solving the problem. Understanding the value that each individual contributing employee, from the janitor to the CEO, brings to the corporation. Honoring and respecting them, getting their input, is very, very important. You know, you can't tell me how to put a bicycle together if you don't give me instructions. If I've never used a power tool before, how do I know what buttons to push? You have to engage these people. And sometimes these figureheads get at the top, and again, they diminish and degradate the workforce. Those are the individuals that are making that machine run. We had a philosophy at a company I worked for with, there was an inverted pyramid where the power really came from the bottom and went up. And it was a dynamite company. I'll never forget it. Overland Storage and Proxima.
That's a rare company that thinks culturally that way.
It was amazing. But now, you know, the business world has changed so much, Dennis. You know that, like I know that. Everything is now off-site. Everything is virtual. During the pandemic, these corporations had to take all their intellectual property and entrust it off-site to someone's home. You were not able to monitor the productivity initially of your employees because they were doing it from home. They had those badass kids pouring Kool-Aid in the laptop that you sent home. And so you've got a lot of change, flux, and pivoting. What do you say to individuals that are in these corporations now really about honoring that, this new change, this new paradigm?
I actually don't think that the new paradigm of working from home changes the precepts of my philosophy and protocol. I created it for the most part 4 years ago when I wrote the book, prior to COVID, when everyone worked in offices. Yes, there's a great number of the workforce now working at home, and it does make developing a cohesive culture more difficult, because you and I would have a different electricity with one another and presence if I was sitting across from your desk and not looking at you on a screen. Now, we're both very open and demonstrative people, so we can make this work a little more effectively than many. But I'll sort of revert back to some precepts and facts about business culture in America. 87% of the American workforce is unengaged and unhappy. That's a fact. It comes from Gallup. And what's interesting is that 4 years ago, when I did research to write the book, you know what the percentage was? 87%. Needle has not moved a bit. Now, just I did some research recently because I'm actually delving into the Great Resignation. What the reason that my book took a pop and went to number one again is leadership is scared to death of the Great Resignation, because not only are they losing employees they'd rather keep, they're having a very hard time finding employees to replace them,
right,
that are of the same caliber. And so with that, PricewaterhouseCoopers did a study. 65 to 75% of the American workforce has one foot out the door actively looking for their next job. Mm-hmm. Monster.com said, no, it's 95%. Mm-hmm. So given that, then I've researched, how much does it cost to replace an employee? Well, rule of thumb is 2 to 3 times their salary.
Absolutely. So
if you do the simple arithmetic, and I've done this for leadership of a couple of companies, the simple math of looking at how much it costs them each time they have an employee they would rather keep leave. Then it begs the question, well, how do you keep employees? MIT Sloan School of Business just did a study. Very open-ended. They said to thousands of employees, give us the 10 most important things to you. Money was number 6. Mm-hmm. Number 1, respect. Number 2, inclusion. I want to be included. I want to be in the know. I want to understand our why, not just our what.
But that inclusion also includes diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Absolutely, it does. The next was, I will not work for a toxic manager. 4, I don't want to work in a environment of not intolerance, but just sort of ethical abuse. Mm-hmm. Ethics are really important. Then it gets into money and compensation. Well, they had done a study with C-suite leadership. How do you think your employees feel? Respect was at number 9, money was at number 1. So it shows this massive disconnect, which isn't a surprise because 87% of the American workforce is unengaged and unhappy. There's got to be a reason. So the solution, if it can be really just drilled down, is that we as human beings respond to being respected, appreciated, and trusted. And when we're respected, appreciated, and trusted, we tend to give our best effort. And also, we're going to stay where we're appreciated and trusted and respected.
Well, that doesn't just go for work. That goes for your relationships. That goes for society. That's every aspect of your life. So,
it's the human condition. Absolutely. We live and breathe that.
We have to do the deep dive. We have to pull back the layers and do the introspective work.
And that's what I do in the book and for a client. Is we evaluate what is your culture. Here's another tenet or cornerstone of my whole philosophy. I'm talking to a leader. Your culture is not what you think it is.
Right.
Your culture is what your employees think it is.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, it actually doesn't matter what you think it is. The reality is what your employees feel. That is your culture. Mm-hmm. And so I've developed ways to evaluate what a culture is at a snapshot at a given point in time. So I can say to a CEO, this is your culture. I'm sorry, it's not good news. Most CEOs are not going to like what they hear, because again, 87% are unhappy and unengaged.
Yeah, but again, because they're disconnected.
They are, but I'll preface this by saying
their boss, who is the shareholder.
They are. But at the end of the day, though, a happy, engaged, trusted, respected employee, according to Harvard Business Review, 50 to 70% more productive. Imagine if you could say to a company, how would you like to be 70% more productive tomorrow? Can't be done in a day, but I'll just say tomorrow. And it doesn't cost you a dime. Mm-hmm. Well, how can that happen? When you have a culture of trust and respect and empathy and appreciation and inclusion, people will choose to go above and beyond. There's these two levels of effort. Another thing I say, I'll share this. Every day, every employee in every company in America arrives at the workplace with the same choice. I'll say that again. 200 million employees every day, the same choice when they start the day. How much effort am I going to put in today? Am I going to go above and beyond, or am I going to do the least amount I can get away with, stay under the radar, not get noticed, do just enough to not get fired? Right. And what's the difference between these two levels of effort? 50 to 70%.
Okay. So, but now let's look at, I understand what you're saying. Let's look at the real world. Okay. I'll tell you how I extracted myself from corporate America. Had a boss, coolest company ever. I need you guys to make me $1 million today. $1 million. And if you do, we'll pop champagne. I'll throw you a few $100. Give you 4 or 5 days off. I came back from the vacation. I was like, wow, $1 million. We made it that day. You know what that joker said to me? Today's maximum is tomorrow's minimum. We're pushing it for $1.5 million. Okay. There was no respect there.
No.
He didn't even allow us to settle in with the good news without other demands. They become disconnected. Businesses are looking at productivity. How much can I get done for the least amount possible? They don't want to do the hand-holding, the coddling, the nurturing that it takes to change the culture, just like in society. They don't, that's not important to them. And now you're looking at the numbers like I'm looking at the numbers. Inflation, possible recession, wars, disease. All of this is going on. To go in and coddle your employee and say, you know what, we're going to be a little softer. We're going to be a little gentler. We're going to, you know, we're going to care more. Yeah, we're going to wait to see the numbers at Q3. What are those? I just don't see them buying into that, Dennis. And that's not what you're doing. I know it's very genuine. And I know that it is going to work. But for, again, Fortune 500 companies that are looking at their stock, their stock numbers depleting. How are we gonna tap into that?
One they just company, don't want to. One company at a time, April.
Okay.
I get what you're saying. I'm not throwing in the towel. I know. I'm absolutely positive that if, and it's not just reading the book, it's bringing me or someone like me and my team in. Mm-hmm. And the leadership team has to say, okay, we are bearing ourselves to you.
Right.
We want to do this. Because if a CEO wants to do it, the rest of his or her team doesn't, it's not going to work. Mm-mm. If you have naysayers. So the first thing is you've got to have a company that gets, we need to change. And can this change happen? And can it radically affect how employees feel and whether or not they stay? It absolutely can. There's just enough companies doing it, April, to be models. Now, I'm the first one to say that every time Forbes or Fortune or Wall Street Journal or Fast Company puts out a list, the top 20 culture companies in America, they're the same 20 companies. It's out of the tens of thousands of companies in America, there is a veritable handful that get culture, but enough of them do to illustrate it works above and beyond someone like me advocating it, however logical it is, however much sense it makes. And what I have done, as certainly as best I can, is I have tied behavior and attitude to actual productivity and revenue. And I've made the two on the same line so that a leadership team really can say, if they buy into it, okay, wait a minute. What you're saying is that if we create this culture, that our employees will be driven to, one, stay with us and they're not going to jump ship, and two, there will be an increase in productivity because of this above and beyond versus I won't get fired today. I guarantee them that there will be.
I believe you. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer. I don't want to be the Debbie Downer, but I want to definitely come with an opposing point of view, because we're still dealing with pay inequality. for women.
Well, you can't have a good culture with pay inequality.
No, you can't. You know what? And this is another thing that gets me. There, you know, this is the big $25 buzzword: diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't want to be a number. I don't want to be just that black person. I want to have a seat at the table. I want to be a decision maker. I want to be an influencer. I want to be an impactor. That's when you're changing corporate culture, be it women, be it men, be it straight, be it gay, whatever. It's all inclusive. So there's a lot of turning over the soil.
But wouldn't you agree, though? You and I've been around a while. I've been around longer than you have, I'm sure.
All right, I'm going to let you own that.
But it's certainly better now than it was 30 years ago in terms of, acceptance of not only roles in gender, but roles in sexual orientation.
It's certainly
better than it was.
I wouldn't say certainly. Wait.
It is. Come on.
It's better. Okay, I'll agree that it's better. How much better? I think that it's just disguised in a different kind of way. I'm just telling you from my perspective as a woman of color that have been in these corporate environments. Okay. And I'm not, you know, I've hung with the muckety mucks, you know, and the bottom feeders. Okay. I totally get it. I totally understand also the great resignation. But what I don't understand is, what the heck are these people going to do? Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. They're going to end up being entrepreneur. That is one of the hardest jobs. You built a business. I have a business. That is one of the hardest jobs that you can do. And you still are not working that singularly. You still need a team of people. You still need to hire where you're weak. So you still need to incorporate these same type of values as an entrepreneur, as a Fortune 500.
Well, I would agree, but I think most are leaving to go what they perceive as a better job, meaning they have a certain skill set, whether or not they utilize that skill set in the next job. Employers are so hungry for talent that if someone is nominally unhappy in their job, it's easy for them to go because of the great resignation, because of the very, very low unemployment numbers. I mean, and the swing is mind-boggling. 18 months ago, we were at the highest unemployment since the Great Depression, 15%. Mm-hmm. 18 months later, we're at 3.5%, the lowest in six decades. So it
That's
gives-
why I don't have a lot of faith in the numbers. I'm just not, you know, I'm just not watching the pendulum swing. I understand what you're saying. I get it, you know, and your boots are on the ground. You do it much closer. You have a better radar on it than I do. But I'm just gazing the pulse of the people that I talk to all around the world. Just really where their head is at now when it comes to employment. Well, I respectfully call them W-2 employees. There's nothing wrong with going into a company, being that independent contributor, making a difference. It used to be where you really cared about, you know, you were working at Ford and you really cared about the machines, the machine that you were putting out on the road, these vehicles, or you were working at Goodyear and you were making the tires and all that. Do you find that the employees, let's switch it up, really want to invest that much? I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal that said on the average, even beyond the great resignation, if you stay with a company anywhere between 5 and 8 years, you're winning. So what is the employee's perspective on really being there, building a strong organization?
It all comes back, and you agreed, that as human beings, we respond very consistently to being appreciated, trusted, shown empathy, shown honesty, all of those things that we've talked about again and again today, that the perception that, oh, I'll throw some money at it, or 24-hour-a-day food, or a coffee, you know, a barista in the lobby that employees can get coffee, or nap pods, or foosball tables, and you can go on and on. None of that is culture. That's stuff. And it's fun stuff. Right. But in and of itself, it's almost meaningless. That if a company allows, for instance, toxic employees to stay, if there's toxic managers, well, she's a top performer. He's our biggest salesperson. We got to keep him. No, you don't. What a truly culture-driven CEO and leadership team will do is say, I'm sorry, if you're not going to buy into this culture that we're creating based on appreciation, trust, and respect, you got to go. I don't care what you make. You're gone. And then other employees go, wow, that's the real deal. What I promise CEOs is if they do that, they will have employees coming out of the woodwork thanking them because they were too afraid to actually say something. Because they were a manager or they, you know, knew the senior VP and there's just a dynamic and I'll call it, the euphemism of the old boys club, good old boys. Yeah, it happens. And it can create a very toxic environment. So the openness that you're talking about and the inclusion, it has to be sincere or it won't work. Tony Hsieh at Zappos, he actually wrote a book as this, here he is CEO of this juggernaut growth company. And it's called Delivering Happiness. Had nothing to do with the customer. It was all about delivering happiness to employees. When they had a job opening, they'd get 1,000 applicants for a warehouse job. It's not because 1,000 people wanted to work in a warehouse. They just wanted to be at Zappos. They'd heard about it. They'd gone on Yelp. They'd gone on Glassdoor. And it was just a buzz. This is a great place to work. And employees find you. And I advocate that that's absolutely doable. And actually, it's building an intentional culture. And
okay. So exactly now let's talk about the culture of the millennial. Totally different beast. You say the stuff. I've been to Google. And the stuff is all good. Okay. You got a ping pong table. You can work from the cafeteria, you got a masseuse, you know, the stuff is valuable. Their mindset is different. The way that they compute, the way that they think, you know, they don't want a cubicle. They want to be able to work from their phone. They want to be able to work in a tiny house, drive a smart car. You know, their mindset is different. It has shifted. What do you say to that group?
I'm going to go very counter to what you just said, because what I believe is nearly the diametric opposite of that. Absolutely, they're different. They're better at technology and they have different expectations and they listen to different music. And the way I talk about it in my keynote is I say this, and I actually utilize video, but I started flying trapeze at 56 years old. I'm now 68. My catcher's 23 years old. We cannot be farther apart as a generation. I mean, good God, I'm 43 years older than he is. We share everything, profound things, exactly the same. Trust, achievement. I inspire him. He inspires me. And I'll go back to trust. He trusts I'm not going to come off the bar early and smash into him. I trust I turn it around on a blind trick. He's going to be there. We have this level of involvement in one another's lives that transcends all generation because it is based on respect and trust and appreciation. So my belief in this is that you're exactly right. Yes, generations are different and there may be accommodations, but the bedrock from a human nature standpoint is that a 25-year-old responds the same way to being trusted and respected and included as someone my age, as a boomer.
You know, if they don't,
it's a bad hire. They're the wrong person.
Right. And I get that. And millennials, I love you. Absolutely. Work ethic is different, you know.
And again, I have
responsibility and loyalty to the organization is not deep rooted the way that it was when we were growing up.
Oh, do these companies deserve loyalty? I don't think so. If I were 25 and I'm treated the way corporate America treats people, I wouldn't be loyal. except if it's a company like Zappos, Southwest Airlines. There's a handful of companies that get it. I will always come back to that basic tenet of human nature, April, that when we are treated this way, it's not like it solves every problem in the universe, but I've got a bedrock, I've got a foundation under me. And do I make different accommodations as I look at a Gen Z 23-year-old versus a millennial 40-year-old versus a boomer 60 years old or 58 or 65? I may have to look at those and understand that I have to make accommodations. But will a Gen Z stay if all of these things are felt? I advocate that they're much more likely to stay. And in fact, it was Gallup that did a study that money is not the driver.
No.
Gen Z and millennials are much more concerned with your why as a company. What's your why? Why are we doing this? If it's put this cog in this hole 300 times a day, why? Doesn't matter. You don't need to know. They'll be gone. If they're somehow brought in and included, even if the job is mundane, but frankly, a great culture will try to make that job less mundane. But that said, the person understands and embraces that they're part. And you said this very early in our conversation, to feel a part of something. I want a seat at the table. Doesn't matter if it's a janitor or the senior VP of marketing. Everyone is important. A great culture values everyone. Everyone gets treated with respect. Everyone gets treated with trust. And there's a profound and genuine inclusiveness that transcends what most companies do. I would advocate that most companies don't deserve commitment from their employees, because they don't. If I don't get commitment, I'm not going to give commitment. One of the things that I say quite often is that part of the human condition is that we respond to life in general as to how we are treated.
Absolutely.
And we will return that. So absolutely, when I am treated with all the things we've talked about, I won't go through the litany again.
Right.
But when I'm treated that way and I'm compensated fairly or well,
right,
and every day I go to work is like, yeah, it's kind of a cool place. And again, it's not foosball, but foosball is great. If you have all of that Google stuff on top of a great culture, you're greatest company in the world.
But I mean, you know.
But all of that stuff by itself.
Right.
Window dressing.
Absolutely.
And people will not be committed. And so what are this is, we've gone for a short interview. We've gone pretty deep in the weeds on this. And I thank you for that, because we've gone down the rabbit hole a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a good place to go with this.
It is, but you know, and that's what sparks change is it, being open to dialogue and having the conversation.
And it's got to start one company at a time.
It's been, you know, the old boys school of my way or the highway. But those individuals are moving out. I mean, and not to get political, but you look at our political situation right now. You're seeing that all of these young millennials and Generation Z are really concerned about guns and their safety and the water, all of these things. It's going to be a massive movement, and they're going to be moving these old fuddy-duddies right on out. These people that have had a seat, they're so ingrained, it's unbelievable. And then what's going to happen is going to be a culture shock again, because my age, maybe, you know, 40s, they're not used to that. They're not used to this dialogue. They're not used to that mindset. So we also have to prepare ourselves for this shift, okay? Because, again, like you said, it's not like it used to be. You know, they want to be swinging from a trapeze. They want to be flying high. And that's what I want to talk about now. I want to talk about you flying high. How in the world did you start swinging on a trapeze?
It was absolutely by accident. I had not spent a life wishing that I could be a circus performer. I actually went to a Club Med And here's this huge trapeze rig. And I happened to say, and this is, I said, that's trapeze, you can do it. And I kind of went, get out, I can do that. And I was just one of those people that the first time I climbed the ladder, left the board, trying to learn my first trick, I rolled off the net and thought, this is the coolest thing I've ever done in my life. I got to keep doing this. So I found a place where I could train. And that was about, well, 11 or 12 years ago now. And first it was once a week and then twice a week and then three times a week. And so I am probably a little more aggressive with it than many people who learn to fly. Almost everyone who starts trapeze, you're belayed in a safety belt. It's actually really dangerous without it. You have a net, but imagine falling two stories into a trampoline. If you fall badly, you can really, really, truly hurt yourself.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but I want to interject. You know, my first experience with trapeze, what was that movie with Tony Curtis?
It's iconic and absolutely inaccurate in so many ways. But
I'm telling you, I could binge on it. I could watch it over and over and over.
And here's some fun facts. Did you know Burt Reynolds had worked in a circus? He did all of his own flying in that movie.
Really?
He was the catcher. He caught. Really? Now, Tony Curtis was a professional. His double was a professional trapeze artist. And Gina Lola Brigida, her double was a professional flyer.
But that was such a great movie. What's
Burt
the name?
Lancaster, trapeze. I don't remember the name
of trapeze.
Trapeze.
Grace,
and Burt Lancaster.
Google it. It is awesome sauce. It is absolutely awesome sauce.
And when you watch it, realizing Burt Lancaster did all of this, it makes him even more amazing. This Academy Award-winning actor literally could have the chops to fly trapeze at that level. Amazing. Just amazing.
Well, I think that, and it's kind of sexy too. I like to see those men in those little tight pants and a little wife beater.
I've got more pairs of neon tights. You'd have a laugh. But there are some of us who then want to fly more and more. And we take, when the time's right, we take the safety belt off and then we fly out of safety lines. It's a lot edgier, but that's the pure side of flying. And it's a fairly small number of recreational flyers that ever
now,
fly.
I don't know if you want to, how deep you want to go into this, but you had an accident. You had a surgery.
I did.
You had a surgery, and I was following you. You know, I was like, I was your bestie. How you doing, Dennis? You know, I
remember you did.
It. And I was like, you know what? And you recovered. You know, thank you, God. And you're back flying again. Were you nervous?
Oh, the first couple of times, sure. Yeah, I'd had a massive spine surgery. I had 12 laminectomies, 6 discectomies, and a fusing of L4-5. When I went in, I had 6 ruptured discs in a row and a complete displacement of L4-5.
Was that a result of that, or just, you know?
No, just a lifetime of doing sports. You know, I'm an old guy, and my discs And I work it pretty hard. I've been an athlete all my life and have probably done maybe more abuse than many would. But I had it took me 6 doctors to find the surgeon. I literally went through 6. Nope, 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 nope. And finally found the guy who understood me. And he said, yeah, we can fix you up and you'll fly again. I had one, my first doctor, neurosurgeon.
Neurosurgeon.
And he looked at me when I said, well, my goal is to come back and fly trapeze. He goes, no, that's stupid. Why would you? No. He said, you're going to be lucky if you can walk without pain. That's my goal. Mm. And he said, you shouldn't be doing it now. At the time, I think I was 65. He said, you shouldn't be doing it now. And I went, wow, are you not my doctor? Found the right doctor. He had the right attitude. He did the fix. And my comeback season, I did everything I'd ever done on trapeze, plus some, absolutely pain-free. Mm-hmm. And so it is an absolute 100% recovery. And I do get that I'm really fortunate in that.
Yes, you
many
are.
Many people have spine
not
surgery.
Not a dream catcher, and that's not a dream crusher. What are those awards back there on that shelf?
Those are Emmy Awards.
I thought so.
We have actually won 6 Emmy Awards over the years.
I'm scared of you.
Grab
one of them. I want to see it up close. Grab one of them. Bravo. Bravo.
Here we go. Wait a minute. April, meet Emmy.
Hey, Emmy. I've been in the audience, and I've been able to stroke her. Maybe they'll have one for podcasting.
They should. Once a year or once every 2 years, we actually make a documentary film. So most of the time we're doing corporate videos, 90-second, two-minute videos, lives on websites and social marketing or social media. And that's what Quantum Leap does. But we do documentary films, and this was for last year we won Best Film. Christy, one of our producers, won Best Director, and we won for Best Technical Achievement. So we won 3 Emmys with our last documentary. And the year before, we had actually won Best Film in historical documentaries.
Wow.
So we like to mix it up.
Well, let me tell you.
You're very sweet to ask about that.
You are flying high, you are mixing it up, and you are doing deep-rooted work. And I like the banter back and forth because that's what my brains want to know. They're going to ask those questions.
They're really good questions. Believe me, I'm in a minority right now, April, and I get that. If I keep rolling
ageism.
Back.
Ageism. You know, yeah, oh. You know, I've got an uncle, bless his heart. He's working at 80. I'm like, dude, you know, now he didn't plan. Well, you know, the ex-wife unplanned the plan, but still.
But I get ageism. I'm well into my 60s. My resume doesn't matter. There's no company in America that would hire me, no matter how qualified I am, no matter how energetic I am. There's not a company in America that would be likely to hire me for anything based on my skill set. Now, I could probably go be a greeter at Walmart or work at Home Depot, but I'm talking about, you know, a job utilizing my skills as a communicator and filmmaker.
That's the problem. Well, that's part of the problem. That's a part of the culture. Because me, my history and my story and my family story and epigenetics and my all of that is a part of who I am. So mixing the old with the new can only be a recipe for success.
Not looking at
this wealth of knowledge that can help mentor and mold and structure this upcoming generation is a disadvantage. And I think that it does a disservice to an organization.
Part of my metaphor with trapeze is exactly what you just said, that I inspire these 23 and 24-year-old flyers with what I am able to do, because they're going, well, you're doing stuff I'm doing now or trying to do, but you're 40 years older than I am. That means the sky's the limit for me. I am completely inspired by their courage and tenacity and skills and heart and drive and all of those uber positive things that we say about people when they're exceptional. Mm-hmm. So we've got this passion and trust and a feeling of utter support for one another in that environment. And it's exacerbated by the fact that we're all at risk. They're flying out of lines. I'm flying out of lines. We screw something up, we are going to get hurt. A catcher misses the catch or takes the catch and then I slip out, it's going to be a real rough trip to the net. I'm trusting that the catcher will either throw me off because the catch isn't there, or if he's going to make the catch, we're there. And I will challenge someone in the corporation. I said, we can do that out there. You're saying you can't find common ground with a 26-year-old salesperson? Bullshit. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. When people of different ages can come at each other and find the areas of consistency and find the areas where they have things that are in common, not just, well, you're this and you're this and your music's this and this is my music and you don't get tech and I love tech. Yeah, it's all true, but let's get to the core. Let's get to what drives our heart. Let's get to what drives our mind. Let's, and wow, what you can accomplish once you're there. I absolutely believe in what you just said about the generations being stronger together than apart.
Absolutely. And that's absolutely what my show is based on, is emotional intelligence and raising relationship capital. That's what we do here on The Edge. Dennis, I could talk to you for hours. You are such
a person. You are awesome.
Tell my brains how to get in contact with you. Who's that pretty lady that just went
back there? That is the director who won this. And this is Christy, and she won this.
Where's she at? She's gone?
She's going to come say hi.
Come on, say hi, Christy.
She just is back from yoga. This is April.
Hi, Christy.
This is Christy.
Bravo. I'm so proud of you and your accomplishments. You guys are doing amazing, amazing work.
This guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Thank you so much. Nice to meet you. You got a great team there. You really, really do.
And
I am really inspired by what you're doing. I have faith. I have hope. I know, like you said, it's one company at a time, one employee at a time. I hope that it's at least 10 CEOs at a time.
I'm even encouraged that the Great Resignation is going to help the cause, because it's getting CEOs' attention where they weren't paying attention maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when it was just business as usual. Right. You know, if someone doesn't work out or they quit, fine, we'll replace them. You know,
Big boys, we call Amazon Daddy Jeff. you got Daddy Jeff, and you got the Walmarts, and you got the Teslas. All of these people, Virgin Airlines, you know, these people are going to the moon. They're creating the next wave of technology. And I really believe that if we don't get in line, we're going to get left behind. Well, so I'm looking forward to.
And you mentioned Virgin. I didn't mention them. Branson, rock star, cultural rock star.
I'm on his list now. I'm trying to get an interview with him so bad. And you know, you look at Shaq. You look at people that are really LeBron. That are really stepping, they've made their money, they're stepping outside of their comfort zone, and they're creating a culture of change.
So they're going to change the world.
Change is going to come. We wrote a song about it.
I absolutely agree. And the more, this is awful for me to say, but the more of me that die off, the better. Meaning that old white guys in their 60s have been running America for a really long time.
And but you know what? I'm not really down on that. All I want them to do is to include the beauty and the brilliance of us, everybody included. You know,
I do too. I'm gonna play realist. You were playing realist earlier. There's a lot of these guys, and I've been with them, April, and so have you. They're not gonna change. They're just not.
Right. Until you know better, you can't do better.
I agree. But I think that I will work much more effectively with a 45 or 50 year old CEO, 35, 40, 45, 50, than a 65 year old CEO, unless they're really exceptional and very open.
Come over to our team, because we're open women, people around the world. Work with us to be the template. Brains, I got somebody I want to turn you on to that is really a mover and shaker, this whole virtual world. But also, this needs to be incorporated, because I don't want it to be reversed. I don't want people to get so stuck on their, you know, blackness or whiteness that they cannot see the gray. And that's where we need to come to. We need to come to the gray, because, you know, we all have to survive. And I'm just so tired of the same old conversation of the haves and have nots. And it's getting worse now. I mean, they give us a $15 an hour raise, and now the cotton picking gas is, there was a place here in San Diego, $7.50 a gallon.
Yeah. And what a coincidence. The major oil companies are booking record profits, never seen before profits.
Because there's a war in Ukraine. I don't get it. But whatever excuse works. But you know what? We're going to work it out. And it, again, it takes people like you and I having these type of conversations open, honestly. We can agree to disagree, you know, but that's how we learn. That's how we work through it. And Brains, run out and get a copy of Dennis's book and watch one of his award-winning documentaries. Tell him how to get in contact with you, sir.
Well, the best way to get in contact with me is just my email. It is Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at QLPnow.com. A very simple.
Wow.
Simple email. So I don't know if how we can do this. I can't put it up on the screen, but just Dennis at QLPnow.com.
Oh, and it's going to be I respond to every all over email. The place.
I respond to every email. Now, did you want to see some trapeze?
Is this your backyard, Dennis?
I wish it was. This is in the mountains up in Big Bear.
Oh, wow.
A friend of mine runs a camp.
Look at that. How does that feel? Is that exhilarating? Oh,
I can't even describe it. It's the best thing ever, ever, April. It's what keeps me coming back. It's the reason it's my passion. I'm going to just jump this here to about here. Yeah. Now, here's some different tricks.
Is that some kids there with you in the camp as well?
Now this is my home rig now. This is here in Arizona.
Wow.
Actually, I'm going to make this screen a little smaller. This is different. So here's like two or three different tricks. On my 65th birthday, I decided to throw every trick I could in the same day. And we'll just show you one more here.
What kind of skill set do you have to have for something like that? Do you have to be, good at gymnastics? I know you have a lot of upper body strength, and you have to be relatively petite in size.
All of those help, but I was never a gymnast. I'm certainly not petite. It's mainly core strength. I would say number one is core strength, and if you've got some core strength, you'll be amazed at what you can accomplish. And then as you do it more and more, you want to be in better shape. As you increase the difficulty of what you do, you want to be.
Look at that! You're doing a sexy bag. Go ahead with yourself. Look at that! Wow!
So
it's way too.
Yes. Well, and that's actually the criteria. A coach won't let you go out of safety lines until you can show that you can consistently land safely. Because otherwise, the liability is just too great. They would lose their rig. Someone literally breaks their neck, they're done. So you have to. I mean, they're done. Who run the rig? They're going to be out of business. Mm. So the coaches tend to be very discerning before they will let a recreational flyer or any flyer fly out of safety lines. And you have to really show them that they can do exactly what you just said, land safely.
Absolutely.
So that's what it looks like, my friend.
You have landed safely here on the edge. I thank you so much for your time, for your energy, for your wisdom. And it's been worth the wait. Absolutely. I'm so glad that I pursued you. You are the best.
I'm glad you did. You're a rock star. I enjoyed being here very much. And I just look forward to staying in touch with you and your brains.
Absolutely. And if you're ever in San Diego, come on by.
I will do that. There's actually a place I love to fly in San Diego. So
don't be shy, okay? Thank you so much, Dennis Ford. Brains, check him out. QLP is for you and your company. Monetize your culture. Thank you.
Bye.
Talk to you soon.
See ya. Thank you.